You know, on The Takeaway, we've talked a lot about the drug cartels of Mexico, but a drug problem in West Africa is turning Guinea-Bissau into a narco state. The country is the world's fifth poorest nation, and it also plays host to an entirely different scene. Its streets are lined with Italian sports cars. Its bars are filled with guests with a taste for expensive liquor, all because it's one of the main hubs for the cocaine market in Europe. Ed Vulliame reports for The Observer, the UK-based paper. He's just written a three-part series on the drug trade, and the most recent one looked at Guinea-Bissau. Ed, it's great to have you on. And
good morning.
It's Guinea-Bissau, located south of Senegal on the west coast of Africa. There's a lot of little islands. It reminds me of, you know, maybe Florida in the Miami Vice days. How did this, you know, unassuming country in some ways get involved in the cocaine trade?
It came about due to sort of innate corruption but also because it, for really geographical reasons. I mean, you mentioned Mexico. The fact that 90% of the cocaine consumed in the U.S. comes from Mexico is partly to do with clampdowns in the Caribbean. The same clampdown sent the European supply routes to the West African coasts that were literally the shortest transatlantic crossings from South America. You can get to Guinea-Bissau in four nights, staying still by day by ship, or you can fly with one fueling stop. And so the Guinea-Bissau has become the entrepôt, along with other West African countries, but it's the worst case, for almost all the cocaine coming in thence through either Spain or the old tried and tested Italian routes into Europe. Yes, and thanks for calling it a narco state. That's what it's become. There are all these fancy terms like failed state and things. Guinea-Bissau is now run for and effectively by the narco cartels, and the recent assassinations of the president, President Vieira, and General Tanganyika, there are tribal spins on it, as there might well be, but I see these very much showing all the signs of a narco war, either intra-Colombian or between Colombians and Asian cartels trying to get in on the same patch.
Well, then, how close is Mexico, which is the other subject of your series, to being a full-fledged, full-stop narco state? I mean, the clampdown is what we're told explains the violence in the border areas in Tijuana and Juarez. But if Mexico is a narco state, that's pretty disturbing south of our border.
Well, absolutely. And I think that this is, I mean, obviously they're two very different discourses. One is at West Africa. One is, over the Rio Grande, 20 minutes walk from El Paso. But the situation is the same in each as regards the people. If you talk about Tijuana, Juarez and so on, I mean, one of the things, these are always seen as stories. This is partly what a book I'm writing is about. Rightly or wrongly, as you know, cartels fighting for supply routes to the United States and Europe, where our priorities are. But that's not right, because where the river flows through, people will drink. So that, like Guinea-Bissau, cities like Tijuana, Juarez are now blighted by domestic addiction. In Tijuana, Juarez, these have been going on for quite a long time. But in Guinea-Bissau, only 3 years ago, coke started getting washed ashore, and they were lining soccer pitches with it. And they were putting it on crops, which then died. They were so naive. They're less naive now. They're smoking the stuff as crack, or pedra, as they call it there. Mexico's the same. Mexico's not a narco state in the same way. Obviously, it's much more complex. You have the cartels waging a war on Mexican society while being integral to the Mexican economy, if you like. Whereas in Guinea-Bissau, they simply run the show. There is no President Calderon sending the army in against the cartels. The army protect the planes coming from Colombia. So Mexico is not a narco state. But the point I wanted to make, is that these places are themselves blighted by drugs. And Tijuana, Juarez, Guinea-Bissau, generations are being lost to crack and crystal meth in these places. This is the tragedy which has to be added to our discourse on the smuggling on how it affects you in the United States or us in Europe as entrepôt.
What I was going to say is just, what about the moral calculations here? I mean, there's been plenty written about drug use from more of a cultural perspective in the U.S., and I'm thinking of Bret Easton Ellis and the, what is it, Bolivian Marching Powder? Is that what it's called in the first line of his novel? And so there's this sort of pop culty side to how people think about drugs, and then there's the cost to human beings in the West, and then there's the cost to people in the global South. How do we reconcile those? What's happening between
right.
the consumption and the production?
Well, this is right on the button. The thing is that we like to think of these things in the setting of great big cartels fighting like armies for the plazas, as the Mexicans call it, coming into the United States or wherever. But that's just the staging. Actually, the most vicious violence in Mexico, for sure, northern Mexico, and now in Guinea-Bissau, it seems, is about to happen, is small. The narcotraficantes, they work like any other multinational corporation. They outsource the dirty work. They don't do it themselves. Most of the most vicious violence is between little street gangs fighting for little plazas for the what in the terms of any business would be called the outsourcing or the tender, the subcontract. This is where the violence starts, and then it starts getting paid in, the tender is paid in kind, in cocaine itself. Here's the moral point. We live in this society that's trying to get all touchy-feely about where the coffee bean for your frappuccino comes from, or whether your mange tout peas are fairly traded or ethically grown. For some reason, as you rightly say, the snorting coke is exempt from this discourse. It's got this kind of celebrity glitz, as you rightly alluded to. Part of the propulsion behind this book I'm writing is, why is that? It's a very strange sort of double-faced twist. The imploding economies of these countries, the corruption of these countries, and the sheer human trash created by the river of drugs coming through, not to the US or to Europe. That's a matter for them to deal with. But through these places, how many lives of cocaine did that line cost when it went up your nose? It's a question we don't ask.
And we have to wrap it up here, but that's a great question. How many lives did that line cost? Ed Vulliami of The Observer in the UK.
Thank you.